Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Imperfectionist with me, half of Carla, the podcast where we embrace the imperfect. I hope everyone is surviving the summer months, whatever that means for you guys, whether you've got the little ones off, whether you are just trying to deal with the heat and the clamminess in Ireland, or if you're listening in another country and you've got aircon. I feel you and I would love that for you, but not for us, unfortunately. But today on the podcast, I'm joined by Sarah Louise McKibben. You might know her as Rock and Roll Mama on Instagram and on TikTok. And I was so delighted to have her. Sarah is somebody that I connected with back like nearly at the very, very start of my we joined Instagram basically at the same time and we're like growing at the same time. And she is just so authentically herself. She is obviously, as her handle on Instagram and TikTok would give you the idea, she is a bit alternative. She is a tattooed, pierced, fabulous rock and roll mama herself. And this is her first podcast appearance. So I'm very honored that she is joining us and that she trusted me to come on the podcast. And we really get into it. That's like, I honestly think that we probably could have recorded about 3 episodes, but we chat about her transition, like from traditional jobs to becoming a full-time content creator. And we also delve into the importance of self-care and then the misconceptions around alternative fashion and being an alternative girly, an alternative mama, and what that can mean for you and what, you know, society, how society might view us, you know, those of us who are black during the summer and, you know, have piercings and tattoos and what the world might think of us. So it was a fantastic conversation. I'm so honored. So without further ado, let's get into it. Here is Sarah Louise McKibben, aka Rock and Roll Mama.
I'm actually devastated I couldn't come down because I would love to have met you in person. I feel like I've known you for so long now.
I was just thinking, like when I said that to you last night, I was like, I feel like I know you anyway. You know, like I've like, God, how long has it been? When did you start?
Oh, five years ago.
Yeah, so we started around the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you were one of like the first people I found and I was like, oh, she's cool. She looks like my kind of human being.
So already then though, I think you already had a following on YouTube and stuff. And I was like, YouTube. Oh my God, she's famous.
Now the tables have turned. Mrs. Famous.
Definitely not. You're like CEO of a company and all this.
Like it's all good. It's just like the imposter syndrome is real. So, you know, it's like, how did this happen?
You got to expect that though.
It's just, it's the natural, the normal part of, I think, being a woman as well. A woman
absolutely.
In business.
Especially, definitely. Because you always like always being the subordinate. Like, this can't really be mine. Someone else must be controlling this because I couldn't possibly know how to do that.
Exactly. It's like, there's no way that I could be the one that's doing this at all. Like, you know, or it's like, well, it came too easy. Therefore, it's not like real. That's kind of like,
oh my
weird...
God, I get that all the time.
Do you?
It's like undeserving. It's like, or it won't last.
Yeah. If you didn't struggle for it, like it's not real. If it's not like, but like Vincent will remind me, be like, you know, you put 5 years of work into this before like you had any real payoff. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not the same. And he's like, what are you talking about? I totally get it. It's just, I think, is it a woman thing?
I don't know. I think it's maybe the fear of getting something that you really wanted that not a lot of people have. And then it's like, well, sure, people tell you, especially I think in Ireland, sure, that won't last. That's a novelty. Well, I'm sure that's a novelty, that.
Yeah, that's
it. That for you. That's
good for you. You and your little thing that you're doing there. Like Claire and I were just having that conversation earlier about like, you know, when you're doing something, people are like, that's nice for you, isn't it? You know, and you're like, oh, thanks.
My mom is the biggest number. She looks at me and she goes, I really hope it works out for you. And I'm like, would you talk to a businessman and say, God, open a shop? God, I really hope that works out for you.
No, you would not do that. You absolutely would not do that. And that's coming from your mother.
My mother, yeah.
That's so, it's not begrudgery though in Ireland. It's like this. I don't know what it is. It's just this like, this kind of like anything that's good won't last. And like, you know, it's not going to, but make the most of it now because, you know, it's not a pensionable job with the ESB or something.
Oh I was like, are you going to still be doing this when you're 50? Like, do you really think you'll be standing doing this when you're 50? I'm like, mommy, there's ones on there that are 50.
Yeah.
Like, there, when this goes, there will be something else. Social media is, it's marketing, it is going forward, it's not going
Yeah,
backwards.
and as long as you're going forward with it, you know, it's
Exactly.
you're going to keep pivoting and making it work. It's like, remember when we started off and it was all Instagram like posts? It's like static photographs. Do you remember those days? Remember how
Oh
easy
my
those
God.
days were?
It was so much easier. Go to your back garden, get a few pictures,
That was
edit them,
it.
upload.
Yeah, and you'd be done in 2 seconds. And now you're like, as soon as Reels came in, it's like, oh man, like, I have to
It's
actually.
all hard work now.
And now
It's
it's
all
really
hard work.
hard. Yeah, now it's a lot more work.
Really is.
It's a
And
lot
time
harder and
consuming.
time and, yeah, and thought
Time
process.
consuming.
Thought time and thought process. And yeah, it's fun, you know, but it's like, it's a lot more
Oh, it's
work.
a gift. But I think people think that it is a gift that you don't have to work for. And yeah, like that, we probably have more lighting and camera and photography things in our home than some photographers do.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. And there's some of them that I don't use. And I'm like, I have some really expensive equipment. And I'm like, why did I buy that? I don't need that.
Yeah,
That's
well,
not
do you know
actually going
what?
to.
I actually just got this computer out, my MacBook, and I opened it, and Marcus came up and he goes, "There's a lot of dust on the back of that." And I was like, "Well, I'd like to see your fucking Xbox, see how dusty that is."
When was the last time you opened your MacBook?
When I did that YouTube video
The
about
one
3 months ago, that's
YouTube
what I bought this
video? It's, yeah, it's fun, isn't it? When you actually have to like go.
honestly, it pays for itself.
Yeah, it's grand. It's fine. It's fine. It's all worth it. It was totally worth it. But yeah, you're right. It's like, it's so much stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people have no idea. Like, you
Oh
know,
no.
you just, just take a photograph there and throw it up. You'd be grand. I'm like, yeah, if only that's how it worked. I was only saying to somebody the other day, it was like a reel that I did, and it was something that I had spent, you know, you might spend months thinking of and like planning it out and like doing the, like putting so much effort into it. And it takes hours or days to edit, and you have this beautiful caption and everything goes up and it plummets. And then you do something in like 5 minutes
Oh
and,
my God.
you know, it's the one that goes viral and you're like, why? Like, how? Like my biggest, it's, yeah, my biggest video ever was one that took me literally 5 minutes to do. I was like, how does this happen? Why did this happen? Like, you know, it's, maybe it's, I shouldn't think more. Maybe that's the thing that we need to think about.
I think going forward, people are starting to like the more normal
Yeah.
than they like the, I always viewed Instagram as like a shop window. For me, that's my advertising, and then TikTok and stories and everything else is maybe more real life and easier going and relaxed. I think people are starting to really just like that part of sort of influencers or people on social media because it's more relatable,
Yeah.
where they see you under these big lights and this constant moving video or music or whatever, and they just can't relate to it as much. And I think that's why a lot of the time it plummets. And then when you do something really relaxed and easy going, people relate to it more.
Yeah.
It's less thought out, it's less planned, it's simpler, and people like that.
It's so true. Like I did recently for Body Slims, like in part of the course, we did like cooking with Carla videos, like recipe videos, but like in my kitchen, like in my family kitchen, with like a bit of washing in the background, you know, and like the piles of stuff that we did move out of the way, but there were still some piles. But people were like, oh, I loved those. They were the like the best things you've done, you know, and it's because I think it was just a normal person in her normal kitchen making dinner. You know, it
Yeah.
wasn't like this like aesthetic and beautiful thing. And I think you're right. I think there are definitely will be those people who will always be aesthetic and like have these like perfect worlds, but I'm never going to be one of those people
And
because,
I think there is an audience for those people, they're
yeah.
like home creators or whatever. I could never be a home content creator because every room looks like a bomb site at least once a week.
Oh,
So
yeah.
there's no way I could have people I have view in every room in my house. It'd be impossible.
I
But
like,
some people,
they
that's their
can.
thing.
You know, like I've literally been complaining about my floor in my house for 5 years online. Like, you know, the fact that the paint is chipping off it. Have I done anything about it? No. But it's just there. It's chipping off it. And I'm like, well, definitely. People are like, would you not show more of your home? And I'm like, no, you really don't. You don't want to see the rest of my home. Like,
This
it's.
is my washing basket from 3 weeks ago.
Yes,
This is
exactly.
the mattress that I didn't bring to the dump after
Yep,
getting
pretty
a
much. That's, yeah, that we had two mattresses in our hall for about 3 weeks at one point. See? Relatable. That's just normal. That's just what people
I'd
are
like to
like.
see that. I'd
Yeah,
like
I
to see
want to see
more of
that. And we're
that.
more, yeah. This is the reality of what's going on. It's like that, do you remember the real life story
of like on MTV, they used to have those. It's like, you think you know, but you've no idea. It's like, well, actually, we're just all like, have crap.
Do you know what?
Everywhere.
I always thought it was odd because growing up, my mom, she lived in the countryside and we had like a big bungalow. It was converted. And I mean, you could go into my mom's house at any time of the day and any day of the week and it would be immaculate.
Spotless.
I mean, there's no dust, there's no dirt, there's no, but this is from a woman that hasn't worked from her early 20s. So this was her.
That was her work, yeah.
It was always immaculate. And then when my auntie got married, she got this big, beautiful house not far from where I live now. It was big, beautiful house, massive. And we used to go in her main bathroom. The bath would be piled up with washing. I remember thinking, oh my God, like, how does she live like that? And like, her spare room was piled up and blah, blah, blah. And then now as an adult, I'm like, do you know what? That's real life.
That's reality.
Like, that is what most people live like.
Yeah, that's what the rest of us are like. That's so true. I remember as a kid, because my mom was like that as well. She was like, and still is, like, everything will be immaculate, you know, like, be really, and my mom herself would always be really well presented, you know, and look perfect at all times. And I remember going over to a friend's house, like when I was like 5 or 6 or something, and coming home. And this is one thing, like, my family will slag me about. No, they were like, apparently I said, like, they didn't even clean up when they knew I was coming, you know? And it was just like, because my mom would have made us clean the whole house if there was like other people coming to the house, like the house would have been. And now I'd be like, if somebody's coming to the house, I'm like, no, sorry, love, like, you're not getting the house clean. You realize it as an adult, the reality of like, yeah, I'm not cleaning up.
Yeah, and you wonder how they dedicated so much of their lives to doing it. Like, my mom will come to my house and judge it. And I go to her house and I always look at, like, do you know, like, she has like wooden kitchen cabinets. And I always think, God, there's no dust on those. Yeah. Like, there's no dust on the ledges. Like, how do you get that?
How do you do that? Yeah. What do you do with that? It's literally, my mom arrived in our house last night and had dinner. And I turned around and the kitchen was clean. And it was like the most spotless it had been in days. And I was like, how did you do that? Like, where did that? How? Mothers, they're a joy and a blessing. And they'll also bring us all back down to reality very, very quickly. Very quickly.
Yeah, you can't compete with them.
So one thing I always love to ask people, like, in, like, at the start is like, what's one thing that you used to tell yourself that you now know is like completely not true?
That's the only question I knew you were going to ask me. And
it's the one that you didn't know the answer to.
I've been thinking about it because I think there's two things, and they're probably both very cliche, but the first one is to tone down, especially being from a small town in Northern Ireland, to tone yourself down to be what you should be or what is expected of you or what is normal. And the second one would be, as cliche as it is, I can't do this. I can't do this. This is a sink or swim situation. I can't do this. And those are the two things that stick out to me that I used to always tell myself that have been the complete polar opposite of what have actually made me able to do what I do now.
Do you think, like, talk to me about like your style and like toning down, because it's such a, I love that idea of, you know, when we're told to tone down, and then was there a turning point where you were like, no, I'm not going to, like, I'm just going to be myself? Or was it something really gradual that happened? Like, what were you like growing up? Were you always a bit different, the kid in black? Or were you?
When I was 13, well, I grew up, my dad was very much a bit of a biker. Like, he always had bikes growing up. He always had tattoos. And he loved AC/DC and, you know, Meatloaf and all. I knew every song by Meatloaf ever by the age of 9. I could do full, like, the full song solo by myself at family barbecues. It was a real highlight. And
can you sing?
I dressed like a tomboy, and I remember my mom remarried and he was like a farmer and we had quads, and I remember, and he had like lorries and things like that, and the lorry men would come in and I would be standing with my quad and like Formula One overalls with my hair down to my bum and like a helmet on, and they all used to laugh at me because I was such a tomboy. And then when I got to like 13, 14, I just didn't really fit in with these girly girls, and I really found my group of people that were, maybe they just weren't the popular kids, they were the alternative kids that were more, they would have been emo back then. And when I was 14, we started going, it's a very popular thing in Belfast to go to City Hall, and we used to go there every weekend and drink and do all sorts,
just stand outside it and like, yeah, yeah, you just loiter it. Yeah, like that's like Central Bank in Dublin.
Exactly. Well, that's what we did. That was our central bank, and until the police moved us along. But we used to, people used to come up and take photos with us and everything. Like, tourists would come up and take photos. It was definitely a novelty. And from there, I think I used to go to the shop called Fresh Garbage. I don't know if you've been to it
No.
in Belfast, but it's basically, it's still there today. It's basically like an alternative shop, sells incense, like corsets and punk rock stuff. And I used to save up my money and go there and like get a skirt and a matching corset. And I used to backcomb my hair. I had like a mullet and backcombed it, and I dyed it different colors. And that was me pretty much when I was 14 on. That was my style. And then I went to university, got out of university. University, I kind of toned it down a little bit, but I still would have wore like band t-shirts and things like that, but I wasn't really focused on my style as much. And then when I had Fiona and lockdown happened, and I was very much, I had started just to wear plain clothes, like jeans, maybe like a leopard print top. I completely lost who I was. I looked completely different. I gained lots of weight, as you do from pregnancy. I was so unhappy. And when lockdown hit, it was just me and Fiona. And I remember I had nothing to do apart from teach her how to walk and talk. But when she went to sleep,
that was it.
That was my time. And I was following all these girls who had just started social media pretty much around the same time as I did. And they were alternative women, most of them from England. And they were posting what they wore and what they liked to wear. And I was like, God, I love that. Like, I love that style. So I didn't have much money. I was on, I think they had let me off work at the time because all the nurseries and everything were closed. So I was being paid, but I was at home and I just had a little bit of money. And I was just buying from sales and trying to put outfits together. And the more that I did, the more I sort of got back into how I was basically whenever I was a teenager. But I tried to progress it a little bit more. And the more I did that, yes, people sort of made fun of me and I was posting it and getting this validation online that I wasn't getting in real life of like, yes, you look great, like you're doing so well. And these people that didn't even know me were supporting me, but people in real life weren't. And I think then I found that, well, I'm happier doing this than being alone.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be judged either way. This to me isn't alone. And the more that I threw myself into the style I had, the less alone I became. And the more I was like, no, this is who I am. Like, this is who I am. So everyone else can like it or lump it. And I think that's how I ended up back into my style.
I love that you basically ended up like coming back to yourself as like a teenager, you know, and like, but it's the authentic you.
Yeah, like who you actually want to be and not who other people are telling you. Yeah. So like, oh, you're a bit old for that now, or oh, like you need to be doing this now. I remember very distinctively whenever I had Fiona, her granny on her dad's side telling me, you won't have time to do makeup anymore or you know, wear what you want anymore after you have this baby. I hope you know that. And I remember that stuck in my brain because I was like, well, my mom always wore makeup and she had four of us. Wouldn't I have time to wear makeup?
But I remember that as well. Like when I became a mom, I was thinking, I won't have time to do this anymore. And one of my best friends said to me, she was like, you make the time for what's important to you. And for me, like in lockdown as well, like I every single morning got up, got dressed, did a full face of makeup, even though I would be not seeing anybody or I might be on a Zoom call or something like that. But it was so important to me to be dressed and present myself because it was an act of self-care. It was a way of showing myself that my value, and it's not something frivolous, it was something that I was like, I need to do this for me, because I'm sure you love it as well, like that kind of almost the ritual of putting your face on in the morning.
I think it makes you feel human, and I also think if I get dressed and do my makeup every day, I'm more productive as a person.
100%.
And I think, you know, a lot of maybe old-fashioned people or older generations simply think that, you know, you need to give that up because you haven't got time for that. Maybe that's why they can dust their cabinets so well.
maybe their houses are immaculate and that's why.
You're wasting so much time.
Yeah.
But saying that, like my mum always had her makeup on. I remember watching my mum put makeup on from a young age, and she always had red lipstick and always did her hair and had her hair done blonde, and that was ours and ours, just sitting in the hairdressers.
Yep.
And you know, she did all those things, and I think to me it was dystopian not to look after yourself. But at the time that I had Fiona, I definitely wasn't looking after myself. I had gained 4 stone, I'd given myself a back problem, like I had I wasn't looking after myself. And that sometimes I think people prefer to see you that way than actually support you succeed and change.
But it's more comfortable for somebody to see you in a place where they are comfortable with you being, rather than being yourself. Like, and have you felt that there has been a change or like a shift in the people around you since you embraced yourself more?
Well, I wear rings. I mean, I haven't got them on me right now. Let's say sink or swim, right? And I'm a very black and white person. And I always give myself ultimatums in life. I don't know why. They help. And I'm a bit of an extremist that way. And I distinctly remember hearing that there was a group chat of people that were talking about me when I first started doing social media. And I was like, right, I have two choices here. Like, I can either post what I'm doing and block them completely, or I can let them win and never post again and never do anything that I want to do and just shrink back into who that box they want me to be in. And I blocked every single one of them and I continued posting. So I have no idea what they think of me now because I blocked them all.
Do you care?
No, I never think about it.
It's funny. And were they people you knew in real life?
Oh yeah, there are people I knew in, like, the people that helped me get where I am now are people that a lot of them I didn't even meet. I've never met.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it?
Yeah, the ones in real life aren't the ones that supported me ever.
Yeah.
And I mean, my mom did in fleeting ways. She'd always be like, oh, I liked your post four times. That must get you some, you know. She hasn't got a real clue what it is. Like, she just thinks, oh, well, that's nice. I don't know how you get paid, but that's good. Yeah.
As long as you're paying the bills, I suppose it's all right.
I know. Like, and then one day, obviously, you've got to retire and do something else. I don't know, like clean people's houses.
If that's what happens, that's what happens. But
That's what happens. Yeah. Obviously, you'll get married, you'll have four kids, and that'll be it.
Yeah, you'll be grand. You look fabulous, but you won't have any income.
Yeah, you won't have any income, and you'll be completely reliant on everyone around you.
When you were, as you embraced your like your alt style. So, like, maybe for those of you like our listeners who've never seen you before, or you know, don't know about like alt fashion. How would you describe like the way you present yourself to the world?
I think alternative people in general use how they dress to show how they are on the inside. Mm. So things that they love. So some people are really into gothic architecture and that'll be their style, or maybe it's office goth, or maybe it's some people still love to dress skater vibes and stuff like that. It's to show how what you love. So like whether it's music or generally, I love thinking of gothic clothing as architecture, because I think layering is such an important part of alternative and gothic clothing. It's like a way of self-expressing without being as beige as everybody else. It's not simple, it's complicated, and I think that represents how people feel maybe on the inside, is that they're not simple, they're complicated, and these things are ways of showing other people their self-expression of who they really are. And a lot of people struggle with talking about who they really are as well. And to me, that's what it is.
It's like presenting yourself to the world. It's like this is who I am without having to be to say it. You know, like I always think, I always think like about like quote unquote normal people, you know, like how do they let everybody else know what they're into? You know,
I think a lot of people find it easier to shrink or be the same as everyone else. Because it's easier. It is easier.
It is, yeah.
And I remember going to school on non-uniform day one year. I think I was maybe fifth year or sixth year. And I remember one of the teachers looking at me and going, that's not really how you dress in real life, is it? Like, you've clearly done that as a joke or something when you've come in. I'm like, but this is how I dress.
What were you wearing?
I think I just had, like, I remember having a knee-high pair of DMs on. They had, like, the pink roses on them.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had, I don't know, skinny jeans, maybe, like, a leather jacket and a load of bracelets and necklaces, probably backcomb my hair, the shit out of my hair, and it was probably mad looking,
probably actually quite toned down in comparison to some, right?
And I remember I also had a year head in like fourth or fifth year, and she hated me, and she used to call me out for random ear inspections for earrings, you know, like random, because that was obviously affecting my learning abilities. But I did go to a very Catholic grammar school, so you know, you can only expect that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, did you feel kind of like really different to all of your friends, or like you had a group of all friends, but like, did you have
had a group of alternative friends? Yeah, but not a lot of them. Like, I remember that day, the non-uniform day, a group of us had agreed to all come in dress and how we normally dress, and none of them did but me. I think for fear of just being, I can't, you know, blame them, because it is for fear of being looked at differently, I suppose. But we did have a group of us that were all like that and would have went all out every weekend and dressed like that every weekend, and that would have been our thing. But I remember the ear head that used to check my ears calling me out one time and telling me that my whole look and my persona was just a defense mechanism, and actually I'm a really nice girl underneath.
This is a really interesting take on your fashion sense.
I know.
Because you cannot be a nice person if you wear black.
No, you can't possibly wear all those chains, and but that's all defense in case someone physically attacks my emotions. I'm like, I've got all these spikes.
Yeah, I've got these spikes to literally use like self-defense against you.
Self-defense,
do you ever
stay
feel
away from me.
Yeah, stay away, please. Do you ever feel sometimes I feel this, that you're like, can be not alt enough?
Or, oh yeah.
I think this is really niche though, isn't it? Like, I think a lot of people wouldn't understand this concept unless they were in this world.
Yeah, like there's a few different sort of aspects of that I feel sometimes, because I wear tan and
yeah,
I go to things like Download Festival or tattoo conventions, which we do every year. I can be the odd one out because I'm wearing like tan, like full orange tan, and hardly anyone wears tan.
Yeah.
So that itself gets me called a poser quite a lot. And probably the more like the glam makeup rather than the gothic makeup sometimes gets me. And then because I like aesthetics procedures, people don't like that as well, and they'll call that normie, or I got called a standardized person recently.
As an insult, I assume.
As an insult, yeah. I was more, what did he say? I was more aspirational before.
Before what?
Because I got composite bonding.
Oh, God. Oh, my.
I was more aspirational before. And and then obviously it depends on the day of the week. Like some days I will just wear band t-shirts, skirts, and that'll be my vibe. Or other days I'll go completely gothic and I'll look like a Killstar witch. Or other days I'll be dressed in like Beyond Nine gingham sets and I'll be mum gear.
Yeah.
Probably just jewelry and hair and makeup, but it really depends on the day of the week. And I show all of it on my either stories, TikTok or my Instagram. And yeah, all the time I get called a poser more times in a week than I would like to admit.
I can imagine you're asked to name top 5 songs on a daily basis, are you? So if anyone's ever experienced it, especially as a woman, I think if we wear a band tee, so like currently I'm wearing a John Fogerty like top, so I can imagine that people are like, oh, name like top 5 like Creedence Clearwater Revival things, like, okay, I can.
Yeah, and then they also expect, like, you get to a certain age and they're just like, right now you can't dress like that anymore. And I think because I have so much Botox, people can't tell what age I am, so they don't know if I'm like 26 or 36 or maybe 40. They don't know.
I love, what age are you actually, if you don't mind sharing?
I'm 31.
30, yeah, okay.
People they don't know, so they don't know whether to be like, you're too old for that, or like, you would have wore this 10 years ago, or like, I'm a poser. They can't tell, they don't know.
Isn't that wonderful though, that they can't tell?
Yeah, like, I love to confuse them, like just always keep them on edge, keep them on their toes, you know.
You have to kind of find a way to like just make it work for you, don't you? Like, you have to just to do it. And just like, do you ever find, especially as a mom, that there is a certain expectation to wear more kind of toned down clothing or the school gates? Like,
I think you overthink it too, though. Like, I think whenever I initially went to Fiona's school, I only have one child, but whenever I first brought her to school, I used to think, God, like, they're going to really look at me, like, they're going to really, you know, stare at me. And I did on occasion get stares, and I probably do still now. I haven't got very good eyesight without my glasses on for far away, so I don't always see when people are staring.
It's a good boundary to have, probably.
And I do find that, another thing, whenever you were saying about being old enough, like, I think people expect me to have, like, I do have some hand tattoos, but you can't see them, and I don't have any neck tattoos. I do at the back. I don't have face tattoos, but I do here. I think because people can't see them, they don't even know how much of my body is tattooed. And when I first started going to Fiona's school, and even now, I don't really get my legs out or wear shorts or anything like that, because people do stare. Then they think, oh God, I didn't know you had that many tattoos, or I didn't know you had that, or, you know, because people do naturally. But, and I always thought people were quite standoff to me, but I think maybe they thought that I was standoff to them, because I just have a natural resting bitch face, and I probably look like I'm constantly in a mood. Or I might have glasses on or be on my phone frantically trying to upload something before I pick my daughter up, and then that's me wiped for the evening, or, you know.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, no one really spoke to me. And then there was a few mums that started talking to me, and we were at a party yesterday, and I was talking away to them, and I was like, do you know what? Like, they aren't judging me. They don't think anything badly of me, and I am just creating this. I think you do build up in your head, it's going to be like school and no one's going to like me. And it's not, it's never that. People don't care. They've got their own lives, and they probably either think that you look great or they like your confidence. So
yeah,
I think we build it up.
Like, do you think people have sometimes like maybe misunderstood you or underestimated you because of the way you look.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think people, some people think I'm really stupid, like I'm really frivolous because I do. They're like, oh, what do you do for a job? And I tell them and they're like, right. And
yeah.
Then I think that I'm really frivolous, or I'm just into my hair and makeup and that's it. But I have a first class honours degree. Like, I went to school. I'm not stupid.
No, nope, you are definitely not stupid.
A lot of the time people think that, or they think you haven't grown up, or, but I think being my partner being a tattoo artist and being in the tattoo community makes it more understandable for them, I think. Mm. I think they understand it more because that is very much part of our lives. And tattoos are part of our lives, and dressing that way is part of our lives. So they're almost less judgmental because they understand that that's, maybe they respect his business, or I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit more legitimate than our business. Yeah, than what we do.
Standing in a bedroom full of clothes.
And trying things on.
And I get it. I get how that sounds frivolous. It does. It sounds narcissistic and frivolous, but it's more than that. Like, the amount of messages I get every week from women saying, thank you, like, you've given me the confidence to even dye my hair black or get more tattoos or wear what I want to wear and not be the only person, you know, that is trying to pretend to be beige or normal or whatever. And it gives women an awful lot of confidence. And a lot of the time the women that message me are mothers and they've just had children maybe in the last couple of years and they completely lost themselves, and it gives them a lifeline and a community of people where this is okay. It's okay to be like this. It's okay to look like this. It's okay to be who you want to be. And actually, in fact, it's not a bad thing. It's for you, and it's okay for you to have something for you. And yeah, it's more than just standing in your room and showing people your clothes. And I think people find that hard to understand.
I think when you put yourself up onto, like, in front of a crowd in a way, you can face judgment and criticism, but you also, in doing so, give other people permission to do the things that they've always wanted, like to be like a beacon of going, okay, well, if Sarah can do this, you know, she's a mom, she's, you know, she's got a really good career, maybe I can do that. And, you know, and like, there was one woman who messaged me to say that she stopped wearing her like normal clothes and started embracing her alt side in her 40s because of something she had seen, like because of videos of seeing me do it.
Yeah.
And in doing like that, to me, was one of like the best messages I've ever gotten, is because it was allowing somebody to be themselves, to be authentically who they are. Yeah. And it's so much more than just like, I too love getting my hair done. I love putting my makeup on. I love getting aesthetics and injectables and, you know, and doing all the stuff. But it's more than that. It's just the way that it's about being yourself and presenting yourself to the world and being okay to be different and not being ashamed of it, and being like giving yourself permission to wear black in the summer and be okay with it, you know, and not be worried about what people are saying.
I think the more that you do what you want to do as well, the more normal it becomes. So the less reactions you get because people expect it. They don't expect me to turn up in multicolored coats.
And have you ever done it? Have you ever like worn something? Do you ever see that the like Dita Von Teese, the Halloween, went as Barbie or is like a cowgirl with blonde hair or something, or Paris Hilton or one of those?
I've never done that, but I might do it for Halloween. But I have my hairdresser. My hair goes alt Barbie. My hairdresser, she owns a hair extensionist shop, and it's
Nikita, is it?
Top to bottom, Nikita. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Oh, it's just amazing. Yeah. Honestly, the gift that keeps on giving. And her shop is pink.
If anyone has not seen Sarah before, like, go on immediately onto her Instagram or TikTok and look at her hair. Her hair is like goals. It is absolute goals. Like, your hair is phenomenal, and like every like since I've seen like I was seen I was like, oh god, I'd love to get into Nikita, and then it was like the waiting list, and like the like, oh, she's amazing.
She has a Playboy bunny that comes from America.
No way.
Yeah, it's just people that come from Galway, from the mainland UK, everywhere, to get their hair done by her every 8 weeks. Isn't that insane?
Well, I'm not surprised. Sorry, I interrupted you saying what you're going to say. Hers is really like her salon is beautiful.
Yeah, her salon is it's pink from top to bottom, flowers everywhere. And she always tells me whenever I get a new weave, she loves to take photos. She does like a lot of hair photography for her business. And she always tells me, please don't come in black because your hair, you can't see it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I did the last time I went in full pink. And she was like, oh my God, this is beautiful on you. You look great. And I had like dark tan and pink. I couldn't recognize myself. I was disgusted. But she loved it. Like, she absolutely loved it.
It's amazing to see the, like, when you actually wear color, how much more you can see your own hair and realize how long and fabulous your hair might be. When, like,
Yeah,
because I'm so
this is
used.
actually a bright top for me to be wearing, but
I
it's
was
just
gonna
the first thing
say,
I pulled out of my
how many
drawer. In a
times?
blind panic of surrounded by vomit and a dog barking, and I was like, oh my God, anything.
Just to give a little context, Sarah's little daughter is sick with a vomiting bug. She's not just randomly normally covered in vomit in her house.
Oh, no.
So yeah, there is a reason why there was vomit. So, but how often do you think you get told to wear more color or to not wear as much black? Do you get it, or do people not do it
Not
to you?
anymore,
No,
no. I
okay.
wouldn't wear colour now. Like, it would be a very odd thing for me to start wearing colour, I think. Like, for me just to just, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. Like, there's
Yeah.
days where I will wear something a bit brighter, but I'm not going to go out head to toe in pink unless I've been specifically asked to for an event or something like that.
Yeah. Because I still get it. Not on a, maybe a weekly basis, and especially online, people, because a lot of, like, my audience, the majority of them wouldn't follow me for my fashion. It would be for, like, wellness or weight loss or mental health or something. So a lot of people kind of project that that I wear black to hide still, like it's a leftover thing from being overweight. And I'm like, no, I wear black because I'm like a metalhead, you know, like it's just, that's part of what I wear. It's part of
Do
my
you know what I think
uniform.
people might struggle with you? Because sometimes you wear more high-end clothing, like All Saints or whatever, more, you know, and people struggle with the thought that, like Sammy Jeffcoat, that people can wear expensive clothes and also be a metalhead or alternative,
Yes.
or people really struggle with that idea that how could you couldn't possibly afford anything nice because
Yeah.
this is your demographic.
I'll give you a secret. Everything that I wear that's nice is from vintage or secondhand because I can't afford to wear it. If only I had the budget that Sammy Jeffcoat has for her.
Many of us had the budget that
Yeah.
even just a bracelet budget would
I
be great, like
know.
for life.
Oh. My God, what I wouldn't give to raid her wardrobe or just go walking around her wardrobe and see it. I'd say it's unbelievable. But
Yeah, you couldn't even imagine that kind of wealth. Like, well, I would like to. I'm into manifestation, so I'm gonna think about
you
that.
are
Sammy Jeffrey
def
every
it's
day.
it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. I can see it happening for you. Like, and
It's gonna
you,
happen.
when I first was following you, were a visual merchandiser in, was it River Island back in the day? Yeah.
I did a degree in psychology, and then I went to work in, at the time I was living in Derry, so I was a few hours away from home. And I started working in a call centre while I was in university. And then I finished uni and I continued to work in the call centre. And I was actually invited back because I'd done a paper for Women's Aid and PTSD, and my university tutor, she wanted to publish it so if you are a practicing psychologist, you have to publish a certain amount of papers per year. And she wanted to publish that paper because we'd actually collected and analyzed data. And they invited me back to basically go back and interview for a PhD at the time, which would have been a scholarship PhD. But instead of doing it, I was like, no, like, I've been in school long enough. I didn't go back, and I continued to work in a call center. And then I ended up moving home from Derry, got another job in BT in a call center. And then I left that job after lockdown. Absolutely hated it. I was terrible at it anyway. I was awful at the job. I had enough of call centers. They were good money, but I'd had enough. And I started working in Deviate in Castle Court. And then I started doing their visual merchandising. And that's when I really got to like shine through because they had a lot of like alternative sort of clothing. They were going
Yeah.
down that avenue because it was doing well. And I left there and went to work and be a VM manager in River Island in Victoria Square in Belfast. And I was the only VM manager there. But there was a lot of cooks in the one kitchen, and that got stressful. And it was from, I think it was 7 in the morning or 7:30 to maybe 4, half 4. And I had Fiona, and she was very young. She was like 3. So I was getting her up super early, bringing her to her granny's, and this was going on. And it had got to like half a year, and I hadn't even taken her to her nursery in the half a year because I'd been working so hard and I was exhausted all the time. And at that point, I was also the only VM manager in like the UK that I know of that had a young child at all.
Okay.
Like, and we also went away to train. So I was in Dublin for like nearly a month, but I was home at the weekends, but I was staying in Dublin to train. And it was just an awful lot for a child that young.
Yeah.
And I left it. And I went to work. Marcus was working in a tattoo shop at the time. And I went and did some social media stuff for them. And then Marcus ended up leaving that shop because that shop closed. And he opened his own sort of shop. So it was just him. It was like a private shop. So at that point, he was paying for a private shop and working by himself. So it didn't really make sense for me to be doing his social media. So I started learning tattoo.
Yeah.
So as you do. So then during that time, I started doing social media at the same time. But tattooing part-time is nearly impossible. It has to be a full-time thing. And I was paying for childcare, running about with childcare. And then social media started picking up. And I just threw myself into that and left tattooing.
That's where you are. So like your full-time content creator now. Mm-hmm. That's your whole job.
I started 6 years ago, like when lockdown happened, that's when I started it. But it was always in the background. I think I got, by the time I was a VM manager, I had like 30,000. I remember distinctly, it was like 30 or 40,000. And Marcus took me to this vintage store in Belfast. And we got a vintage Harley Davidson leather jacket. And that was like to commemorate that I'd hit that massive goal for me. And then by the end of that year, it just snowballed. And thank God it just became a career for me that I could do. Because I remember, this is going to sound so sad, right, but whenever I was like 17, I loved YouTubers. I loved Helen Anderson. I don't know if you follow her.
Of course.
But I loved Helen Anderson, and I used to watch her on my laptop, like in my room, like the way I am right now. And I always wanted to do it, and I made a YouTube channel. I never posted on it. And then when I got to uni, I had a dressing room, and I remember sitting in the dressing room, and I used to talk to myself in the mirror like I was an influencer. I used to talk to myself like, this is what I'm doing now. I still do it now.
Yep.
And I was like, this is what I'm doing. And I was almost preparing myself. And I was like, this is what I want to do.
Like practicing.
Yeah. I was
or manifesting in a way.
But never actually did it.
Yeah.
And then when I got to lockdown, I started doing it. The more I did it, the more confident I became in it. And then by the time that VM role came to its natural end, while I left, it just... Thank God it did. And the 6 months after that, it was like it was just meant to be. It just rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled. And even then, whenever I did become a full-time content creator, it took me a good like 2 years to really make it a consistent income, because it is hard in the beginning.
It's not easy, because I think that there's a lot of, especially young people, you know, that's like their goal is to become a content creator or an influencer or something like that. And then they think, you know, it's in the first month. As long as you're consistent within the first month, you're going to get like your big page. And you maybe you might be lucky.
Yeah.
But for the majority of us, it's a slog. It's a lot of work. It's six, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of doing it constantly, and no big payouts, no big, you know, investment or anything like that, from external into it. And it can be really cutthroat. Like, do you find sometimes that as a content creator versus like the more steady income, what do you think of the benefits versus the challenges of it?
In the beginning, it's just losing a consistent income. But the way I did it, I didn't know it was going to be that, because I had went into doing content creation in a tattoo studio. I didn't know that studio was going to close. We didn't know what the future was going to be. And so the way I did it was literally, it was by accident. So it wasn't that I consciously sat down and I'm like, I'm going to lose a full-time income. But I also was paying for childcare and earning above basically what you could get any help with childcare for. So I was almost paying to go to work. And
Which is an absolute disgrace.
I think I was losing so much time with my daughter, who was so young. Like, I went back to work when she was 8 months old. So I put her straight into nursery.
Yeah.
And I then got like a second maternity whenever lockdown hit, which I loved. But then I went straight back to work once that ended as well. And I think it really depends where you are in your life. Because I had such a young daughter and I was missing so much of her life, working for myself was the dream. That was the goal. Like, if I can work for myself from home, make my own life, my own decisions, this is the goal. And I also really struggled with working in, I'm a terrible manager, I'll tell you that right now, because I love everybody. Yeah. And I have empathy for everybody, and I love the underdog. And I let people away with too much because I can't, I'm not someone that can come in and dictate. I just can't because I just feel for people and I like them.
Yeah, I think
the
I would make
I don't
the
like are usually the main ones.
I feel like I'd make the worst police officer because I'd like feel sorry for somebody if they were, you know, like if they got caught out, I'd be like, oh God, I feel really bad for them. You know, I totally get it. Like you feel like you can't. Like you can't say what needs to be done, you know, or make.
But I also really struggled working in an environment where they almost, I would almost have had to have had my own clothing store because I can't see the seriousness in some of the things that people were trying to take seriously or to put on to other people. The stresses of like almost like this office climate of dictatorship where people are better than you. I really struggle to take that seriously. Like I think everything's funny. And people are like, to me, it was like Devil Wears Prada. And I'm not even sure. It really was like that. And I'm not knocking the job. It's an amazing job. And for a young woman who doesn't have kids, it's probably a dream job. Mm. But for me, it was so hard for me to take it all, to make this my life when I already had a young child at home. That was my life.
Yeah.
And I was missing so much of that because I was working such long hours and I was driving like an hour and a half home every evening, an hour and a half in the morning.
Oh God.
It was the time thing for me. But again, it depends where you are in life. Like, if, you know, if you, a lot of people find it really hard to let go of that full-time job and really throw themselves into the possibility of making their own income. And that is a scary, scary thing for anybody. So I wouldn't suggest either to anyone. For me, it was complete circumstance and that's just how it worked out.
I think that's that kind of happens though, doesn't it? It tends to be circumstantial for a lot of people. It's something that, you know, we think it's going to go one way and then all of a sudden we find ourselves in a completely different scenario than we ever expect. Like, did you imagine, you know, when you were working in DVA, did you imagine that this, you know, flash forward 5 years later, this would be your full-time job, you know?
Absolutely not. And I had no idea. I used to write. I used to, whenever I'd left that job in BT and lockdown had happened, I had no money and I was working in DVA and I was probably paying more money just in childcare, driving down the road and parking than I was actually earning, like as a substantial income, but I'd always worked so I couldn't not work. And I couldn't even imagine even just having any extra money, never mind having this as my full-time job. I couldn't see outside of that. And until I really put my mind into manifestation and how that actually can work for somebody, that I could even begin to think of that. It's even the last year, maybe like 8 months, that I'm seeing the vision that I had for myself. But that vision didn't even develop until I'd left those jobs and I had no other choice.
It's so like a sink or swim kind of thing. Like you have to make it work.
Exactly.
Because a lot of things, like we talk about manifestation so much on this podcast, but I think a lot of people think it's like, oh, we'll just send it out to the universe and sit back and hope for the best. And it's not, you have to make it work. Like when you take away a full-time position and you have your mouth and your child's mouth to feed, you have to find a way to make it work. You have to, and probably because you almost have like a clearer vision than you can, you know, of what you need and what your goals are, the road kind of evolves in front of you and you're like, okay, I'm just going to take this and see what happens.
You definitely have to have self-confidence that no matter, because everyone else is going to tell you you're insane, this is never going to work, what are you doing? And that is, people are going, because they don't have any idea of the possibilities that social media can, the doors that it can open. No one has any idea because it's so new. And particularly in Ireland, Northern Ireland, I think people just have, we're not taught about it. We're not taught what someone can earn, what they can do as their job, what social media actually is as a job. You've no idea. So everyone around you are going to say, are you okay? Like you're leaving this job to go and do that. But it really is one of those things where you have to bet on yourself. You have to know so surely that this is for you. And I really do think people's paths lead them to where they are. So like I always had that interest in YouTube and I talked to myself and then I did a degree in psychology and then I went to work in sales and then I went to work in merchandising. Mm. And all those things together, combined, is basically what someone does in social media.
Yeah, it's almost like your skill stacking. Like your skill stacking, basically, like all of the things that you've learned how to do combined, present into this really lovely package as a content creator.
Yeah, and then you've got to develop the ability to learn technology. So whether that's like a MacBook, a camera. You have to be able to sit and learn to do that, which I find very difficult. I am a dinosaur, and if it takes more than 20 minutes and I'm not an expert at it, well, then I'm terrible at it and I'll never learn how to do it. So everything that I've learned has been from other people and by chance.
Yeah. Are you accepting of help from other people to help you to learn things? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anybody at all that can help me, I will take it.
Well, that's so interesting, because I think there's a lot of people who are very successful who do allow others to help them in their position, that some people who
I mean, I don't have anyone that specifically helps me, but as a group, whenever I started doing this, it was a small group of girls who all started at the same time, and we sort of stayed friendly, and I learned from them probably, like, we would hear things, even bigger influencers than me, I would talk to on occasion. I found out things like Lighten or apps that they use, or just little tidbits of information that I can take and use. And you know, like Helen Anderson, she actually has someone that will do her videography and her photography. I don't have that, unfortunately, but maybe one day.
So
but
nice.
She has definitely taught me about like Lighten and cameras and things like that, you know, and I try and sit and learn from other people. I find it easier for someone to teach me than to go online and Google it and try and teach myself.
I find that like being vulnerable and being open enough to learning from other people and not feeling like you have to know it all is an amazing way to get a step up in the world and to.
I think because social media is so constantly moving forward, people don't. If you just think you know everything, you're going to get stuck because you don't. Yeah. It's impossible to know everything. Every day is a learning day. You're always learning, always advancing, always moving forward. And if you're not doing that, then you're not going to get anywhere. And if something doesn't work, then you have to learn the way to make it work. And that's the way that I think of it.
You have a really significant online presence. Like, how do you manage the pressures that come with having that presence online?
I'd say there's two things. One, I live in oblivion. I have no idea. The amount of people that watch my... I have no mental capacity to understand that many people watch what I do. No, I just... It doesn't even compute to me that 10,000 people have seen that story, 20,000 people have seen me do this. 90 piano always goes to me, why are you showing them your underwear? And, like, and then it's like,
it's only two people. Yeah. Yeah.
No one's seen that video.
They have.
So stupid. That's number one. Number two is I have such an amazing community of people. Like, for me, starting social media wasn't because I wanted it to be my job. Yes, I would love it to be my job at the time. But it was to have people to support me that I didn't have in real life. And I have this amazing, I've been so lucky, and I always say that because I don't get a lot of hate on social media. Well, if I do, I don't see it. I might not see it. And it might be there, it might exist. But most of the comments I get are people that I can now almost call friends, and the DMs that I get and the messages. And it's this amazing community of not just spectators, but people that truly engage and want to have conversations and can relate. And I think people love an underdog, and you know, I find a lot of people maybe that follow me now have just started following me, maybe haven't seen my background or, you know, where I've come from to where I am now, and they might have a different view. But a lot of my followers have stayed from the beginning and grown from the beginning, and I think they really relate to that. They love seeing a progression of someone, not just someone maybe born into this massive mansion that they film all their stuff in and this, like, you know, the dream.
Yeah. Is there anything that you find that's been really surprising about your journey on social media, or something that it's brought with you and like that having such a big audience has brought you?
I think that anybody actually likes what I'm doing.
Really?
I think when you spend so long having, you know, and I don't blame anyone around me. I'm not sitting here saying, oh my God, I'm a victim of everything. Like, people never liked me, but it's not true. But I think there's not as much of an understanding of maybe being alternative, or maybe being self-confident as a woman, or being like, well, I'm doing this anyway, whether you like it or not. And I find this group of people online that are exactly like that, or else learning to be like that, or want to be like that. And that has been surprising to me, because I only had faith in myself. I didn't know anybody else had it.
Oh, wow.
And when people start to learn your story, they sort of pin how they feel on you, and they think, oh, exactly what we were saying earlier, if she can do it, well, so can I. And they can, of course they can. Yeah. Anybody can dress how they want or be who they want to be, but it's finding the confidence for that. And I think those people have given me the confidence, and they've not only given me that, they've given me time with my daughter, which was my main prerogative. And I think the more you do social media too, the harder it is to balance that time, because you're trying to do this because you want so much for your family, but then you're also trying to spend the time with them that you worked so hard to get.
Yeah, it's a real catch 22, isn't it? And I hate the word, especially because we never talk about like balance when it comes to men, but it's so the balance of like trying to be a mom and do it all, you know, wanting to do it all, because the reason that we do everything is for ourselves as well, but it's also for our family. And
well, people say it's this toxic girl boss idea of wanting to do it all, when you actually, in fact, shouldn't want to do it all, because it's just putting pressure on yourself that society has probably given you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were never designed to do everything ourselves. That's why that, you know, women used to not work and they did the housework and they looked after kids. But now it's so different and we're expected to work. But also looking after kids and cleaning the house, we're still expected to do that.
Yep.
And I think it's it is that toxic girl boss mentality of, well, we can do this, just sit back and watch us and we'll do it. But then we leave ourselves being burnt out. And this is why I'm a big believer in self-care, because self-care just gives you, claims back that little bit of time that maybe you didn't have before, that you didn't put into yourself, and it increases your happiness, whether it's just doing your hair, doing your makeup, or going to the spa for the day, or going shopping for the day, or doing some online retail therapy. I'm a big fan of online retail therapy, or, you know, getting something really nice for yourself as an achievement, you know, marking your celebrations and giving yourself that time to be just you and not be the cleaner, the cook, the maid, the working all the time,
the chauffeur, the all the other things.
Yeah, making the appointments, writing things out. I have a calendar on my phone, I have a book beside my bed that I write in every night of what I'm doing the next day. Constantly checking my emails. You know, my to-do list is never ending. And Marcus laughs at me, say, I couldn't live in your head, but my head's constantly, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do this.
Yeah, that's pretty much my head as well.
But it's like, please breathe.
Please breathe, yeah. But I love that you do take time and understand the importance of self-care for yourself, because mm-hmm. we need that, because otherwise we're going to burn out. You know, we're going to
make a promoter of that too for other women, because I think women don't take time for themselves.
No.
And that can be another point where you'll be judged on, is taking what people consider too much time for yourself. But and I think people love coming to my page and saying, actually, this is okay, like, for a mum to do these things for themselves. Yeah. It's important. And I think people appreciate that and they resonate with that.
It's like I experienced it from some people, not a lot, but from some people when it came to dancing. And when I would share like my dancing, you know, a class or a routine that we'd done or a video that I was really proud of, and people would say like, oh, you know, here she is, like, where's her son, you know, when she's out dancing in her like her knickers and her high heels. I'm like, well, he's at home with his father and he's being taken care of, you know, and he's...
You're just leaving him in the foyer with the other dance girls.
Like, and if he was there in the foyer with the other he would love it, and he would be really well taken care of, you know. But it's this idea that, like, how dare she take 2 hours on a Thursday night to herself?
And that's so sad.
It's so sad. Oh. It's so sad. Yeah. I would love for, like, give yourself permission to do that. Like, time is, you know, time is one of our biggest, like, our most important commodities, and we have to spend it in the way that we can benefit ourselves and others.
I think people have a warped view as well, because I think people think back in the day the mothers just stayed in the house and never left, but they didn't. They used to go to ballroom dances, they used to go and see their friend down the road, and they would have had to have walked there, and that was a whole afternoon, or took their bicycle there, or they would have went shopping on a Sunday with their mum or whatever.
Yeah.
They still took time, just in different ways.
Yeah.
And I think now, because it's seen as vain or narcissistic to go and do something, whether it's with your body or your face or whatever, this is, it's like a new age, strange, weird thing to do that people just can't get their heads around. And I think that's really sad, because if they actually did it, maybe they would appreciate it. And maybe that's the problem. People think they can't make the time to do that, and it can be just jealousy. It's simple as that.
I think
you're able to go and do that and succeed at that and go dancing and be good at it.
Exactly. I think it's a when you start to kind of compare yourself to somebody else, it's like a lack of what you have. It's like, instead of focusing on what maybe where you could find the time, you know, instead of doom scrolling for an hour, you know, in the evening, maybe that's a time you could be doing something for yourself. And like, exactly. I'm not perfect.
And we're all guilty of that, yeah. You know, of a parent. And we all live very different lives. You know, I get that too, where people maybe have an office job, or some people are nurses, mm. or whatever it is. And they're looking at us going, well, that's nice for you because you work for yourself. And, you know, people's lives are so different.
Absolutely.
It doesn't always have to be the same kind of self-care, but just taking any time just to be you.
Sarah, we have a little closing tradition on the podcast, which is this Rolodex reel here. I'm going to get you to tell me to stop, and I will read you a question, just some little quick fire questions. So off we go. I'm going to spin. You can see, can you see
I'm
me
nervous,
spinning? Don't be. All right, tell me when to stop.
Stop.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, what's it called? It's Shania Twain. And that don't impress me much.
That is... I love that that's your karaoke. Mine is Jolene by Dolly Parton, which I think they're probably two of the people who have been like, for you, Per, that's like, they're your songs are completely not the ones you would think, but there you go.
Other than Meatloaf, Battered to Hell, but I haven't done that from 9 years old, so I don't know how good I'd be at the guitar solo now.
I feel like we're going to have to do a night out where we get you to do that, and I will record it for the podcast as well. Oh, definitely. All right, we go again.
Okay, go. Stop.
What's the weirdest DM you've ever received? I bet there's
been one man that thought I was his girlfriend, and he put me in his bio and was telling people that I was his girlfriend, and he would message me as his girlfriend, but I never replied. And he was like an American, like, you know, like scary because I, you know, there's guns over there, so I was like, this block.
That's really unhinged.
Up there with some of the weirdest DMs I've had. Yeah,
that's
up there.
That's absolutely
that,
true.
And like people generally asking for feet pictures, or people looking, you know, like pay pigs. I get a lot of them. Like seem like legitimate ones. Like if I don't message them back, like could be a lost cause. I could have made a fortune, but
you could have. There's sometimes where I'm like, I wonder if this sugar daddy's real, because like, you know, $6,000 a month sounds like nice. A really good offer.
I would consider going to dinner with an 80-year-old man. It depends how much he was going to pay.
If you're getting $6,000 a month, like, you know, like that's just working smarter, not harder, you know.
You know, it's so funny. My daughter knows that saying, and that's her favorite thing to say. She learned it from me. She's like, work smarter, not harder.
Oh, I love that. What a great way. That's such a brilliant thing to give her, though. It's true, though. Do work smarter, not harder. All right, one more.
Stop.
What's one thing you wish people would stop pretending that they love?
Crushed velvet. Who's enjoying that? Who's going home in the evening and sitting on it and scrunching into it?
That's the best answer. Mine would be matcha. I just don't understand. It just tastes like grass.
It tastes like dirt.
Yeah, I don't understand. I can't.
You know what? There's a nice matcha one, though.
What?
Strawberry matcha with coconut milk.
Yeah, because it tastes like strawberries and coconut. It doesn't taste like grass. Matcha. Yeah, it's just, otherwise it's just grass. I don't understand. I'm not a cow. I'm not eating it. But anyway, Sarah, if people want to find you, which I'm sure they're very intrigued now, where can they find you? On what channels?
I'm on, I'll not recommend YouTube because there's only one video there. I'm on TikTok and Instagram mostly at rockandrollmama_X. And that's where I am every day, all day.
All day. She's there. She's great.
All day if anyone wants to come and say hello.
She's very consistent. It's unbelievable. I'm very envious.
Yeah. Almost on the hour.
Really? Are you almost on the hour? God, fair play.
Almost on the hour.
Good woman. Good woman. Sarah, Louise, thank you so much. Rock and Roll Mama, you are an absolute joy. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining me on the podcast and sharing so much with us. I know that you were slightly concerned that you were going to overshare, but I think there's never oversharing on this podcast. We love to have the chats and get into things. And I love how you chatted and how she chatted about honoring her style and your own style and being your own self. And like, it's interesting, like back in Belfast, she was like hanging out in this certain area, being like the alt person. And I was doing exactly the same thing as a teenager, hanging around Central Bank. If you know, you know, all of us, the, as we were called, the smelly rockers back then. And the misconceptions that people can have based on image, the ones that, it's interesting to hear different perspectives of what people can assume about you when you dress similar to somebody else. You know, it's like for Sarah, there was so many different ways that people judged her on her looks, you know, and for me, it was kind of the same. You know, a lot of people have this misconception that I'm hiding in black, whereas I'm shining in black. That's my thing. So guys, if you enjoyed that podcast and enjoyed this episode, please make sure you hit the follow button. You can always leave us a review or share it with somebody maybe that you feel loves to be their authentic self and might need just that little bit of a nudge to feel a bit better about themselves. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at The Imperfectionist Pod, where you can also send us a DM. And until next time, guys, make sure you keep showing up for yourselves.